We're very glad to have you here today. If you're visiting with us, thank you for joining us and being a part of our worship. We certainly would love to have you back anytime that you can come and be a part of us. We welcome each one of you this morning. My Bible's open to Proverbs 17 and verse 6. If you'll take your Bible and open there, Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 6. It says, the latter part of the verse, and the glory of sons is their father's. And then if you'll turn over to Proverbs 31 and verse 28, the first part of the verse says, her children will rise up and bless her. When I think of the words of that Bob Dylan song back in 1964, I think of the Schraders. These times, they are a-changin'. In many ways, and they change for all of us. Little did he know when he wrote those words how different life would be in just a few decades. I was in Wichita, Kansas, and I was in a bookstore, and I bought a book called Little House on the Freeway. It's kind of a takeoff on Little House on the Prairie. And author Tim Kimmel made this statement. He says, we sense something is wrong with the way we live, yet we seem powerless to change it. The increase of information and transportation has cost us dearly. We grow older, but not any deeper. We run faster, but no further. And we watch as our spouse and our children become strangers. That's very insightful. And he is true when he says we seem so powerless to change any of this. And so what happens when you have hurried days plus hurried families, then we end up with a life of lost relationships and a life of regret. My grandparents were born at the turn of the 20th century. My great-grandparents were born in the 1880s. And they owned two farms directly across from one another on East State Line Road. My grandparents owned a farm in Graves County, Kentucky. My great-grandparents' farm across the street was in Obion County, Tennessee. And I used to have so much fun when I was a little boy saying, I'm going to Tennessee to get the mail. It was great. But there was another family that lived about 2 miles down East State Line Road. And they had a daughter. Her name was Marilyn. And when they began to search for a middle name for their new child, Marilyn, they chose the name Rose. And the reason they chose the name Rose was because of that family that lived down the road on East State Line Road, the Rose family. Well, the Rose family was my family. The Rose family, that was my great-grandparents. That's why my mama's name was Barbara Rose. That's why my granddaughter's name is Callie Rose. And that's why her name is Marilyn Rose Wilson Haefley. And now you know the rest of the story. But Marilyn could tell you, and I could tell you, that back then life was very simple on East State Line Road. In fact, all across this country, life was pretty simple. I didn't say easy. I said simple. What would our great-grandparents think if somehow they could be transported to our day and just follow us around for a day? I'm guessing as they looked at the world in which we live in compared to the one they lived in, I'm guessing there's a lot of things they just wouldn't be able to believe and comprehend. Back in the day, back in their day, the only way people got the news was either through gossip or maybe reading the daily newspaper that everybody read every word of. In their day, they would flip through the Sears and Roebuck catalog. Some of you are old enough to remember that. In their day, they would finish one meal only to start prepping for the next because it was a daily chore and it took a long time. And the idea of going out to a restaurant, that's a luxury. Very few people did that. And then communications, the phone. Both of my grandparents used to have a chair desk phone in the middle of the house. And on that chair desk phone, on the desk part, was the phone. And the chair is what you sat in the middle of the house to talk on the phone. The cord was affixed so you couldn't go very far. And then they invented the cord that stretches. Look out! And then they started putting phones in kitchens with longer cords that stretched. Now, all of that seems crazy to kids of our day. I saw a YouTube video the other day of a couple of teenagers, and they gave them a rotary phone to see if they could do it. They couldn't do it. It was the oddest thing I've ever seen, as they look at that thing and they try to figure out how to dial those numbers. These times, they are a changin'. True. There was a sign in a North Carolina little town a few years ago. It said this, when you entered the city limits, "We understand a recession is supposed to happen this year. We've decided not to participate." I love that. Because, ladies and gentlemen, as families, we need to do the same thing. And it doesn't matter if you live in the 19th century, the 20th century, the 21st century, or back in biblical times, doesn't really matter. There have always been issues, there have always been things with which families have had to struggle. But guess what? You don't have to participate. You can do things a little different. Just because everybody else does them doesn't mean you have to. So here's the deal. We have to maintain our priorities. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33, Jesus said, "Seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all this other stuff, all these things will be added to you." God will take care of all of that. Now, when Jesus says, "Seek this first," if something is first, what that means is everything else isn't first. If something is first, then something else must be second. Something else must be third. He said the same thing in Matthew 22 when he was asked about the greatest commandment. He said, "Love the Lord your God with all of your heart and soul and mind." And he says a second is like to that when he says, "Love your neighbor as yourself." One is first, one is second. And what that says is priorities, and both of those have to do with relationships. Your relationship with God and your relationship with people. If I were to ask, what is your net worth? Where does your mind go? Where would your mind automatically go if the question is asked, what is your net worth? Well, we start thinking about money and stuff, and that's not your net worth. Your net worth happens to be the people God puts in your path. Your net worth is really about your family. Your net worth is really about your friends. Your net worth is really about your church family. These are the people in your life. These are the relationships that God has placed before us. The question is, how are we impacting their lives? How are we changing their lives? And how are they changing our lives? And for what will you be remembered by them when you're gone? The point is, don't sell the relationships short that God gives us. Christopher Morley writes, "If everyone only had 5 minutes to live, the phones would be jammed with people sending final words of affection to their families." We know that's true. It is absolutely true. If you only had 5 minutes to live, you wouldn't be calling the cleaners concerned about your shirts. If you only had 5 minutes to live, you're not going to be canceling your cable. If you only have 5 minutes to live, you're not worried about who's going to cut the grass. You don't care about any of those things if you have 5 minutes to live. What you care about are relationships. And so the question is, how can we make those relationships better? So let me leave you with four things this morning to think about. How to be a hero to your kids. How to live your life in such a way that you will be remembered for some things that are going to help them through life. How you can keep the fun in your family and keep culture away from your family. So if you've got your bulletin this morning, look there on the back page. Number one, write this down. Be real to your kids. Be real to your kids. I want to show you a verse in 1 Corinthians 2, verse 3. 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 3. I think sometimes we get this impression of the Apostle Paul that I'm not sure is warranted. Because look at his own admission in 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 3. He says, when I was with you, he says, I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. Now he goes on as he tells us that, and he tells them that, he goes on to say, because I wanted you to focus not on anything I did or said as much as what God was telling me to tell you. And his point was, the power is not in me, the power is in the Spirit of God. But what you have to love about the Apostle Paul is you have to love his authenticity. He was very real. He was very approachable. Paul didn't come into Corinth or anywhere else and act like he had, you know, was the end of all knowledge, that he was a know-it-all. He didn't do that. He was very authentic. He was very real. And I guess the question is, maybe especially for us dads, how does that square with us and our persona that we tend to put forth? You know, when our kids are little, they believe we can do anything. They believe we can fix anything. They believe we know everything. I mean, poor mom. Poor mom has to bang the top of the new peanut butter jar on the counter to loosen the lid. But dad is supposed to grab that thing and twist it, and just by sheer muscle and might, he breaks it free. If a mom loses her job, well, that's unfortunate. If a dad loses his job, well, that's a whole other deal. A mom can hear sounds in the middle of the night and pull the covers up. Dads can't do that. Dad has to go down in the kitchen and confront the crazy killer that's running loose in the house. It's tough being a parent in our day, but I think it's especially tough being a dad. You see how the media presents and portrays us as fathers? The media always presents us as the bumbling idiot who can't do anything. Here's the deal. As our kids grow up, they're going to learn something about us that we already know. And what they learn about us as they grow up is we don't know everything. And we can't fix everything. And we can't do everything. And hopefully as they grow up, they're going to learn that you as a dad, as a father, that you're very real. So here's an idea that I want to throw at you this morning. Why don't you beat them to the punch? Why don't you beat them to the punch? Help them see that their father is authentic, that their father is approachable, that their father is genuine, that their dad is a real person. And I'll tell you what that'll do. That'll help them grow up with a better self-image of themselves rather than feeling like the failure who walks in your shadow, who can never measure up to you because of this idea they have about you. That comes home to me in 1 Kings 19 and verse 4 when Elijah was so upset. He said, Lord, I'm the only one left. Take my life. I have no use in living. And then he makes this statement, because I am not better than my fathers. And I thought, why did he say that? Why did Elijah think he had to compare himself to his father? Well, I think a lot of kids grow up and tend to do that. And sometimes they think, well, I don't measure up. So here's what families need in the 21st century. They need authentic fathers. Dads, if your kids ask you a question and you don't know the answer to the question, here's a thought. Say, I don't know. I don't know, son. I don't know about that. I tell you what, let me think on that a little bit. Or if you make a mistake, why don't you own it? When they make a mistake, that's what you require of them. So when you make a mistake, why don't you do the same? Or if you're feeling added pressure these days, why don't you admit that? Because I will tell you, if you're real, your kids will grow up and they will love you for that. Secondly, let's talk about rules. Keep rules reasonable. Keep rules reasonable. Now, don't run to extremes with that, because rules are very important. They're essential, in fact. I remember the day that my kids learned to ride a bike. Well, okay. Off they went. But we had to have some rules about that. And I remember the day that my kids traded their bikes in for cars. And off they went again. But we had to have rules about that. We had the who, what, where, when rule. Who are you with? What are you doing? Where are you going? And when are you going to get back? And so we had to have a very clear understanding about all of that. And we even added two more to that. Rule number 5, don't mess up. And rule number 6, if anything changes, you better call. You know, when you have those kind of rules, you're not trying to just be a mean parent, a nosy parent. You're just trying to be a parent. And sometimes my kids, like your kids, they messed up. And there had to be consequences in regard to all of that. But we had to learn to flex on some things. And you can be flexible on some things depending upon the situation. You know, kids lose respect for parents who never flex on anything. Who refuse to sit down and discuss something, or they never negotiate on anything. So when it comes to rules, make them reasonable. And young people, I will say this, trust must be earned. You got to earn it. The problem with trust, sometimes with young people, they want to, like the bank, they want to withdraw more than they've put in, and you can't do that. There's consequences to that. And so, while there must be rules in our families, make them reasonable. Number 3, practice the art of saying yes. I heard the story of a little boy who thought his middle name was Don't. Johnny Don't. Johnny Don't. Johnny Don't. That's all he ever heard. And sometimes as parents, it is easy for us to adopt the don't automatic mindset. There'll be plenty of times you're going to have to say don't. There's going to be plenty of times that you and I have to say no. And if we have to say no, then it needs to stick with authority and finality. But sometimes you can say yes. One writer talks about the night his kids asked if they could sleep in their clothes, like their day clothes. The mom interjected, she said, "Listen, when you have 4 kids, there are some nights you are so grateful they are in bed, what they wear is of no consequence to me." I've been there, you've been there. Last summer, Alex and I were washing the car. It's a hot day. And I would scrub a little bit, and he'd wash with the hose, and we kind of trade back and forth. And you can imagine what eventually happened with that. We got into a big water fight. And I'd get that hose, and I would squirt him. And then I'd lay it down and pretend to be busy again, and he'd grab it and start squirting me. But now what he didn't know was, on that nozzle on the end of the hose, when I squirted on jet. But when I pretended to start getting busy, I turned it on mist. And so when he tried to squirt me back, it came out mist. And I can still always look at that and go, "What is wrong with this thing?" Well, I tell you what, that's the kind of stuff memories are made of. And you got to make memories with your kids, and sometimes you got to kind of catch them off guard in that regard. Practice the art of saying yes. Number 4, finally, mistakes are not the end of the world. Mistakes are not the end of the world. My mom had a lot of wisdom. She also had a fantastic sense of humor that I get from her. She taught high school English. And toward the end of May, before school was getting out, the school began to have a real problem with water guns. Everybody's bringing water guns and all that kind of deal. So the school finally had to issue this policy, no more water guns, we can't have that, it's getting out of control, blah, blah, blah. And so she was out in the hallway one afternoon, the kids were changing classes. My mom is 5 foot, or was 5 foot two. And she's out in the hallway, the kids are changing classes, and she caught a football player who was about 6 foot three. She caught a football player squirting a girl in the hall, and she just walked up to him and did this. And he handed over the water pistol. And she took that water pistol and she emptied it in his face. And then she handed it back to him. And he said, "Yes, ma'am." Do you know some of those kids came to her funeral? Some of those kids came to her funeral because they had a lot of respect for her. One time my mom heard somebody making a cutting remark on PKs. Anybody know what that means? What, Bob? Preacher's kids. And what they said was, preacher's kids are rotten. And my mom shot back and she said, "That's because they have to hang out with the elders' kids. And the deacon's kids and everybody else's kids." Touche, Mom. Good for you. My parents weren't perfect. Your parents weren't perfect. You're a parent and you're not perfect. So as we go through this parenting thing, you have to give yourself a break. And when mistakes are made, whether it is a mistake by you or a mistake by them, what a great time for an object lesson. What a great time to talk about things. But in the process of all of this parenting, we have to learn the difference between minor infractions that are accidental and incidental and outright acts of defiance and open rebellion. The former requires a little flexibility. The latter requires a stance of firmness, and both of them require wisdom. James 1 and verse 5, "If any lack wisdom, let him ask of God." There are three key moments in the life of a child every single day. Three of them. And it's these three moments that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. Because I will guarantee you these three moments you remember today as an adult when you think about your childhood. And those three moments are when they first get up in the morning, when they first wake. The second key moment is when they come home from school or you come home from work, whichever the case may be. And the third key moment is when they go to bed at night. And those three moments are the moments that they're going to remember as an adult. And those three moments are key as a parent to helping your child not only develop a healthy self-esteem, but have a sense of security and have a sense that everything is all right in my world. And I know we get busy. We all get busy. But those three key moments cannot be replaced. Give a child a few moments of your time in the moments that they will remember for the rest of their lives. Maybe something has been said this morning that will be helpful to all of us. Parenting certainly is not easy at all. We sing the song of invitation. Jordan's going to respond to that invitation and become a Christian by being baptized for the remission of your sins, or if you owe a duty to God because you're out of step with Him and you need our help and encouragement. Come while we stand and sing this morning.